freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
A challenge this week. I think we have a challenge this week.
Be positive?
Nope.
That's an everyday challenge.
That's not the challenge I'm talking about.
Challenge accept.
No, not to be positive. Good. The challenge I'm finding this week is not to have the exact same conversation about the Seahawks that we've had for the last month and a half, and not to just repeat the same few shows. Because the
brother 11-3. What's repeating about
what?
11-3?
20-point lead fourth quarter in Carolina.
Number one in the NFC.
All the things we've been talking about that. That's part of this conversation about them is how good they are, right? How they keep winning and finding ways to win and all that, and you know, sabotaging their own efforts to win and then eventually win. I mean, I just want to make sure we don't have the exact same conversation about this team that we've had over the course of the last month. So I've got a couple of ideas to try to change that up this week.
Okay, great.
Welcome. It's the podcast. I think it's episode 11. Brock, Kyle, Howdy, everybody is here. Howdy's looking at me skeptically for some reason.
We are starting exactly the same because you're walking in here with a take like that and we're all meeting it with incredulity again.
Why?
Again.
11-3, number
one. So good. It's really, really, really good.
Please explain to me more.
They've got the best quarterback in the league. They played the same style of football all year long that's proved itself to be great and better than everybody else. And we had question marks about whether it was lucky. And at this point, at 11-3, it's not lucky anymore. They're just good.
I think Russell's that good. Yep. Russell Wilson is that good. I totally agree with you. And Chris Carson's very good.
Yes.
However,
I mean, Tyler Lock is a pretty good player. I really like him, and he showed back up this week, which was great. And Metcalf's got a big future potentially.
DK is the best rookie receiver in the game.
But best rookie receiver. He's not the best receiver in the game.
No.
He's the best rookie. I'll buy that. Okay. And then,
they played without six starters on defense and still played well.
I was going to start off with something positive, but once again, you've distracted me from it. I was going to start off with something positive, and once again, Howdy, you've distracted me from it by being obnoxious. Can you turn off mic 3 or whatever it is he claims to be on?
Mic 4.
Just turn that mic off so I don't have to listen to him distract me. The Seahawks are not the best team I've ever seen, and they have some major problems when you're talking about some of the upper echelons after Russell and Carson. They might be one of the deepest Seahawks teams we've seen. Their ability to handle all of the injury losses and needs, you know, from players 25 through 53 on the roster and maybe even beyond 53 at times has been incredible.
Yep.
And if all of those guys are contributing the way they are and allowing them to survive without, at 1.6 defensive starters, they could kind of get by with 4 or 5. 6 actually broke them. But John Schneider's got to get an enormous amount of credit, and not just for the couple of splashy moves he made with Frank Clark and with Jadeveon Clowney. Those are sort of the, you know, those are the ones that help you not win executive of the year again. But the rest of the moves and having enough guys to come in and fill Rasheem Green and Lano Hill and Quentin Jefferson and Shaquem Griffin, who's now contributing. You got to give John Schneider a tremendous amount of credit for stacking his roster with guys that are able to contribute. And I'll say this, Pete Carroll credit for developing those guys over the last year or two.
I knew where you were going with this. I was feeling you from the beginning, right? Because the numbers still don't add up. That's what you wanted to kind of open this with. Like, the numbers still don't add up. Like, you're 27th in the league in defense. Like,
and what did you say? You said they're 31st in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they're 31st.
They give up 9 points a game in the fourth quarter. The Seahawks defense at their height gave up like 13 points a game.
Correct.
No, they're just trying to rope-a-dope.
Now they give up 9 just in a quarter.
Just a little rope-a-dope, baby. It's a strategy.
So I know where you wanted to start because the numbers still don't add up. You're plus 26 now on the season in scoring differential, right after you watched a 20-point lead evaporate and it took a 3rd-and-11 conversion where you had no timeouts left, right? And you needed to
get to that,
you know, and all of that good stuff. So I know where you're going to start in you know, the spin on this.
But the positive is the depth.
The positive is that Pete Carroll on Monday on Danny and Gallant is right. We've heard him say a lot of stuff through a lot of years. I used the word resilient like 7 weeks ago and said this is the most resilient team. Pete has flipped that even further And when Pete says this is the most fun we've ever had because of this group and how much they enjoy
it's shocking that this group is more fun when not led by noted fun havers Doug Baldwin and Richard Sherman.
Yes.
Boy, how would they ever get to be fun without Doug around?
Sometimes we call those energy vampires in our home. Like you're sucking the energy out of the room. You're kind of an energy vampire.
Doug Baldwin left, and now it's so fun around here. Do you think those two things could possibly be related? God.
Well, Brandon Marshall kind of said so a couple weeks ago. But beyond that, it is just the total buy-in with this group and how you want to measure fun or how you want to characterize that or how you want to try to put a number on it. It's not as clean. It's not as easy. It feels folksy.
Hold on. It's not clean. It's not as clean. It's not clean.
Yep.
It's not easy. And then the reason it is not clean nor easy is because of themselves.
But you don't get Ben Burkervin and Cody Barton and Shaquem Griffin playing defensive end and Delano Hill filling in and Marquise Blair and Jacob Hollister after some drops and Malik Turner. You don't get all of this. And we could go 8, 10, 15 deep. You don't get all of
Hollister's this. Hollister's a great example.
Unless they're all in. Unless they really do enjoy. Man, you know what I'm excited about? I'm excited about going to practice with you guys. You know what I'm excited about? I can't wait to go on the road with this team, which, by the way, ended at 7-1, which is, I think, a franchise best, which is absolutely even more remarkable and speaks to these guys like being around one another. And you know this from this job, okay? And we know this in anybody listening in the job environment you're in. You know what? When things operate better, when people like going to work, right? When Bob Whitsitt took every picture off our wall and whitewashed all the walls and took all the fun off the walls. And this is going to be about work. And it's hard. And we're going to bring a Belichickian attitude. And this is what we're going to do. It was miserable. The minute practice ended, guys were out. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be any part of this. You've got a group down there. And when Pete says that, he's got a lot of background on a lot of teams that have won a lot of games with a lot of fun. And when he says this is the most enjoyable group that I've had, that I've been around, that just kind of resonated with me this week because that's how you get to offset these numbers that still are shocking to look at and still some game management that is befuddling to say the least.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. It is built around Russell Wilson, right? It's built around his personality and his effort and his leadership and Bobby Wagner on the other side. And Bobby is actually kind of fun. Bobby's a pretty funny dude who likes to joke around, and he's obviously pretty serious when he's out in the football field. Mm-hmm. And by the way, kudos to him. He bounced back, had a really good game. I know he ended up hurting his ankle late, and it sounds like he's probably going to be okay. You know, we called him out a little bit, not so much like just where is he? Like,
where's your presence?
Well, it showed up.
Yep.
Right? I mean,
nearly two picks and a huge one before half.
Yeah, and a big deflection that he had. I mean, he made three or four big time plays, which is what they needed from him.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see when he was the one who went out, that's when the defense finally fell apart. Like, I mean, obviously, I think Quandre Diggs is a really big deal, and we can talk more about it. But when Bobby left, it was like, okay. They didn't have a chance at that point. If they don't convert 3rd-and-11, they lose that game. I don't have a doubt in my mind. Zero. I have zero doubt in my mind that if they don't convert 3rd-and-11, they lose that game.
Absolutely.
They're going to lose.
And only because Jason Myers had missed an extra point. They're only up 6.
And at that point, they have to punt with 2-plus minutes left. The other team's going to get the ball where they've waltzed down the field twice in a row. And for reasons befuddling us all, they have no timeouts left at that point because they've wasted all of them.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yes.
It is so absurd to have no timeouts with a lead. They had a 20-point lead at one point in the second half. They managed to burn all three of their timeouts for no reason.
Is it possible part of the reason Pete's having so much fun this year is the absence of Doug and the absence of not having to talk to you and me on Mondays about
some of
this?
Very possible. It is entirely possible.
He's walking in there like, oh, thank goodness. I don't have to see that salt guy and him hammer me for my usage of timeouts.
What in the world is he doing out there?
At what
is
point he in doing? The fourth quarter, they even took the delay of game. And the very next play, they snapped the ball with 0 seconds on the play clock. They should have been thrown for back-to-back delay of game.
Why did they call that delay? Why? The ones they determine are worth a timeout instead of a delay of game versus that was a one where it was like 3rd-and-1. Like that one, you actually take the timeout. Because it's important. The other one
had to protect
like,
the field goal.
3rd-and-24. Yeah. Hey, timeout here. We don't want to be in 3rd-and-29.
The worst timeout of the season when they've got the ball 4th-and-1 at the 20-yard line, and they decide to call a timeout so they can kick. Why in the world? If you call a timeout, then go for it. If you don't call a timeout, take 5 yards, kick a 35-yard
right.
kick.
If he can't make it from 35 yards instead of 30, then cut him today.
That's the worst
that he shouldn't
ever.
Be your kicker. And then at the end of it all, their defense has nothing. And it's not their fault. They're giving it their all. God bless them. But they don't have the horses at that point. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that the great Kyle Allen takes them right back down the field with a bunch of dump-offs to Christian McCaffrey, some bad tackling, a couple of outs to DJ Moore, who waltzes out of bounds, and they lose because they're going to get the ball back with 30 seconds, needing only a field goal, and don't have any timeouts! But instead...
However...
Is this what you were screaming, by the way?
No.
As you're pacing downstairs?
No.
You dropped an expletive, huh?
Only when Josh Gordon made that catch.
Oh, okay.
That was... one of the best catches I've ever seen.
Unbelievable.
I think it's some... well, we're going to do which is better later. One of the which is better questions is that catch or Tyler Lockett's catch that he made earlier this year.
Ooh,
I might go with Josh Gordon. Yeah. I know the other one had crazy ball control or body control. Gordon's was insane.
Yes.
But Russell just bails him out. Oh, 3rd and 11, no problem. I'll just hit Tyler Lockett. And then Chris Carson does his just man-beast thing. He just runs people over and they end up winning a game. But mark my words, if Russell does, and this is why Russell is so important, we'll talk to Colin Cowherd about it later. This is why this is Russell Wilson's team more than anything else, with the personality of Tyler Lockett and some of these other guys kind of thrown into it. Because on 3rd and 11, facing not just a momentum shift, one of those changes that I believe completely alters a game one way or the other, Russell just calmly escapes a little bit of pressure, because that's what Russ does, buys an extra couple of seconds, doesn't run down the field because Russell apparently doesn't do that anymore, and just hits Tyler Lockett for 13, 14 yards and game over.
Amazing. How about not just alters a game? What about alters a season?
Yeah,
what about
lose
all
that game?
Of this
you
fun
lose that game?
And all of this goodwill and everything that we just talked about, and you lose that game?
After having a 20-point lead?
With 7 minutes to go. You're up 30-10 against a guy that's thrown three picks. You're up 30-10 in their building. The stadium is emptied. Right, against a team who's lost their coach, a team whose season is over, a team whose quarterback is broken with three picks. And if you don't convert that, Mike, and you're right, you know, they drive it down the length and they have this miraculous come from behind three touchdown victory in 7 minutes. What does that do to the season? What does that do to the goodwill? What does it do to all of this direction? You're not the number one seed in the NFC. The Seahawks are 11-3 in the number one seed in the NFC with two home games left. With a team that usually gets better in the month of December, a team that has been all hands on deck, a team that had a quarterback respond along with a middle linebacker, your two captains respond, play some of their best football of the season on the road, and put themselves now in position here with 2 weeks to go to take care of business in their own building. And then very much have the likelihood of the playoffs going through your building.
And they should be able to do this.
Astonishing.
I mean, let's say it. I mean, you're going to face Arizona, who's, I think, a little bit better than their record indicates. And Kyler Murray will scare you a little bit, and he'll make some plays. But, you know, you should be able to take care of business at home against the Arizona Cardinals. I'm not gonna say I'm terrified of them, Howdy, as I famously said a long time ago. But I will be a little nervous in that game because of the way the Seahawks play. And if they make one too many mistakes, they'll lose to even Arizona. And then you gear up for what is probably going to be Sunday night football, final game of the regular season in the NFL at home in your building against what has become a hated rival and Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson and everything that goes into this final game, which should be epic.
Just bizarre, man.
Right?
It is crazy.
Part of me wants the Seahawks to clinch this week. I know it's nearly impossible. You need a whole bunch of things to break your way. But there's a big part of me that doesn't, because the insanity of that, that's a playoff. That's an extra playoff game.
Yes, for the number one seed, more than likely, for a bye. And, you know, the numbers, what was it, 12 of 20 in the last 10 years of the number one home seeds have made it to the Super Bowl. And every time the Seahawks have had it in their building, they have won and they have gone on to the Super Bowl on all three of those occasions.
All right, so help me with something, and then we can come with a little bit more of why this is working. Is there another? Can you think of another team like this? I put this out on Twitter, and I have some answers from the people out there. But can you remember in your life, not even necessarily a football team, can you remember another team that is kind of like this one, that is maddening and frustrating, but happy and rewarding, and ultimately wins a whole lot more than they lose? You know, can you come up with a team that throws as many landmines into their own path, only to then eventually jump over them?
I saw a bunch of the response on Twitter, and the more people brought up the 90s Mariners in the Kingdom, yeah, like my childhood watching those games.
They did that?
Yes, with their closing situation and the number of different cast
starting
of characters.
Pitching was so bad. Oh, goodness gracious. Randy Johnson had the wild thing. He had a pitch named after him that was he threw every 10th or 12th pitch. He was going to throw a ball. He had no idea where it went. It could be 103 miles an hour. It could be at the backstop. It could be right down the middle. He had no idea.
Yeah, I think that there is some commonality there, right? It was just a loud building. It was built on a bunch of frenzy and emotion. You had some just marquee, remarkable talent players. A Griffey in the mix, a Randy Johnson, just generational players and generational talent. And then a bunch of other, like, whoa, how is this guy even in the league? And who is this guy? And
Rich
where did he
Amaral?
Even come from? Where did he even come
what
from?
What is Felix Vermeen doing? What?
So when people on Twitter last night were responding or earlier this week to you and said, yeah, I think some of these 90s Mariners teams were probably more the equivalent. Not the Sonics. Sonics had Kemp and Peyton.
They were crazy
and they
talented.
Were just consistently.
I saw one on here that said the Rasheed Wallace Portland Trailblazers, though. A team that was incredibly talented and certainly won a lot, but also made enough ridiculous mistakes.
That was the 2015 Seahawks. 2016, that was some of that edge, some of that personality.
Yeah, no, they don't have the personality.
Some of that friction,
of
some of that tension, agreed. Some of that just...
They don't have that personality, no. But they do have the make a lot of dumb mistakes, but then find a way to get over them, right?
Yeah.
Can you imagine how good the Seahawks would be if they didn't make all those dumb mistakes? It'd be crazy.
But do they make those dumb mistakes?
They might be 11-3.
They would never make big plays if they didn't make mistakes. Under Pete Carroll, they would never have good plays.
You know, though, I don't know. The never. Kinds of mistakes that this Seahawks team makes aren't like that. They're not aggressive mistakes. Like, the Seahawks of a few years ago, we could always say, because it would be like, Michael Bennett would jump off sides four times.
And still does.
Right. And you'd be like, this is ridiculous. You get all mad. And people be like, well, come on. Like, I want him to be aggressive. I
he's
want him time in
the
snap.
Edge.
I want them on the edge.
They led the league in penalties
right.
in their Super Bowl years.
Their mistakes then were in penalties.
Aggression.
They were in late hits. They were penalties of aggression. That is not the problem with this Seahawks team. That argument does not hold water with this team.
So is it an experience? Is it talent? Is it that the group is so much better than the individual?
I think that's part of it.
I think it is, too. I think it's also stylistically. Let's face it. DJ Fluker, and by the way, DJ Fluker and Upati, for those of us that bet on them playing less than 12 games this year, have been remarkably durable, who have been available. But those guys are 350-pound monsters that are good going forward. They're not very good laterally, and they're not very good in like known passing situations. Little Joey Hunt is going to be awesome when there's some conflict. Is this run? Is this pass? Is this play action? Can I get underneath you? Can I get to the second level? You know what he's not great against?
Aaron Donald coming right at him?
Yes, or Michael Brockers or any of those guys when they can pin their ears back. He's giving up 40 pounds, and he's getting mauled, right? So they've got to play their game. They got to play to their style, or it can look pretty bad. It can look pretty ugly. But the group thrown all together in the mix, the sum of all of those parts and all of those different styles is why they're 11-3. It's not the individual spectacular talents.
Other than Russell Wilson.
Other than Chris Carson. Other than Russell Wilson,
and
other
Tyler
than
Lockett.
Tyler Lockett
those
getting
three guys.
Other than DK that shows you some flashes of brilliance as a rookie and is the best rookie receiver out there, right? And then defensively, Bobby will be in the mix, Jadeveon Clowney when available. There is still some individual stardom. There are still a number of Pro Bowlers. There's still 7, 8, 10 guys that every NFL team would love to have on theirs, but this is much more about the 53 different parts coming together stylistically than it is anything else.
We've had a lot of talk about Russell, and it'll continue. We'll talk to Colin Cowherd about him here in a few minutes, but Chris Carson deserves some extra mention. Running backs don't matter, right? Running backs are all the same. Running backs are you know, doesn't matter who they are because it's all about the offensive line and the hole and this and that. And like most things, we talked about this before, that's an exaggeration. The original comment and the original belief was most running backs don't matter. But there are guys on the
periphery. I think you said about a half a dozen. Is your number way back in the day? There's
usually a few guys at the top and a few guys at the bottom that do. And if you've got one of those two types of guys, you see the difference. When you've got Julius Jones and the hole's open and he can't run through it, when you've got Eddie Lacy and the hole is open and he physically is too large to get to it, it matters.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what your offensive line is creating for them. They can't capitalize on it because they're bad. Or sometimes they just fall over for no reason and give up the ball when they hit the ground. Seahawks don't have anybody like that, do they? Yes, they do. No. CJ Procise, my bad. Oh, he got benched. Probably never to be. Like, all the injuries were fine, but don't do that. You're going to get benched. Anyway, the guys at the top, a few of them do matter. When you've got Marshawn Lynch, it matters. When you've got Ezekiel Elliott, it matters. Now, I don't know if it matters $15 million. That's a different conversation. Yep. But whether or not you want to be paying Zeke $15 million a year. But when you've got a guy near the top of the league, it does matter.
There are, thanks, Peyton.
There are times where Chris Carson matters. I didn't even like the decision to go for it on fourth down. I thought that was a time to kick and go up 16 and make sure you're up two scores and two point conversions. But he matters in that spot because he just keeps his legs going and drives his way into the end zone. When you see some of those toss sweeps at the end of the game and he just decides to, like, he's going to outrun everybody to the edge and then put his head down and pick up another 5 yards, those do matter. They specifically lead to winning games.
Where he is over 1,000 yards now, back-to-back seasons. You talked, you know, about the graphic of the 100-yard rushing games and the number of those that he's had. He's right there with Zeke Elliott the last couple years. When you just watch the league and you look around the league, who do you put ahead of him as guys that the others don't want to tackle? Zeke Elliott is there. I think Alvin Kamara in a unique way because he is so doggone quick and much stronger than you expect.
Yeah.
Mark Ingram along with Lamar Jackson.
So you're going to put Lamar Jackson on this list, don't you?
You do.
Lamar Jackson one of the five best running backs in football?
Right now? Pretty close. Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yep.
He's one of the five best runners in football.
Are you ready to pay Chris Carson? You're going to have $60 million of cap space.
I was thinking about this yesterday.
Okay, so you can now pay him after his third year. You could go to him right now in this month of December, in fact, and get a little bit more of a probably a team-friendly deal, right, to sign an extension to next year's number that'll be a little bit cheaper. Like, you've seen how many other backs now? How many other guys after Marshawn Lynch have you seen, have run through here? Have there been a dozen? At least different guys that have touched the ball since Marshawn.
Yeah.
And yes, Thomas Rawls had a nice 10-game stretch.
But this offensive line was also bad during that time.
This has now been two seasons where this guy's yards after contact, where his desire to punish fools, where his 1-2 punch with Russell, when he gets it, it is just different. When he touches the ball, it is just simply different.
My heart says yes because I love watching him. My head says no. I probably don't offer. Now, if he's willing to sign a deal that is super team friendly,
like $8 million a year,
yeah, or maybe even like, yeah, somewhere in that like six to eight range, like, yeah, I'd do something like that because I'd like to have him around for a reasonable amount of money.
Yeah, I'd lowball him. I'd disrespect him. I'd offer him a contract he'd never sign.
But exactly. I wouldn't sign him to a $12 to $15 million a year deal. I don't think I would. And it's not because I love watching him. He's awesome. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I would get involved with that.
But you see Sony Michel and you see why knee and problem.
Nick Chubb, leading rusher in the league.
Nick Chubb is really good. But you see, you know, your conversation there of the number of the middle class guys. You got an upper class guy. There's no question about it. His teammates know it. The opponents on the other side know it. When Arizona gets ready to play this game, yeah, there's some fear of Russell. There's no question. But there's not fear of that O-line as far as pass blocking. So, hey, man, we're going to get after Russell. We're going to blitz like crazy.
Yeah, I know.
But there's a legitimate fear of number 32. Buda Baker's given up 35 pounds and speed to that guy. And everybody in their secondary is. You know what you're starting to see? Business decisions. I don't want to tackle this dude. He's going to hurt me. Like, he's gotten to that point. So he's one of yours in your conversation of that spectrum. He is on that front end. He is in your upper
class.
How
old is he? What's the age on Chris Carson?
I mean, am I still
going to get good? How many good years am I going to get out of him before I have to watch the decline? Three?
I would think you're going to get at least three more years.
He doesn't and I have him. I have
he
him.
He just turned 25 in September,
and he didn't play. He didn't play collegiately either.
Yeah.
You know, for
you're
like Nick Chubb or Sony Mac. He had some light tread in 3 years, bouncing around some different schools. So as far as a workload goes, it was last year.
Yeah,
it's this year. You should absolutely.
The thing is,
have three
which is easier years. To just stumble into a pass rusher or a running back?
Which could you find in the seventh round?
A running back. And that's where you found
him,
right?
How many other dudes have we seen, though, for 5 years?
But the offensive line stunk during that time, man. That's not fair entirely. You had the Tom Cable, lousy offensive line, stupid scheme, bad offensive linemen, brought in for the wrong reasons. I mean, just as much as you want to talk about how, you know, Eddie Lacy wasn't good, Luke Jokel was worse. Eddie Lacy was better than Luke Jokel, which is hard to fathom that anybody could be, but he was.
Yeah, they're bad.
They were really bad.
They're really bad.
And so I
Chris Carson is really good.
You got Rashad Penny sitting right there. Kyle's been stumping for him the whole time.
Let's
it's not
go.
Just Rashad Penny. It's just the ability to go out and find guys at that position that you've never heard of who end up
it's
being
hard in this day
pretty
and age,
darn good.
We talk about Marquise Blair on the other side and why they took him in the second round. And you'll hear from a lot of evaluators. And I see him during the college football season.
It's Raheem Mostert.
Yes.
Who's that guy? He's really good.
Yeah, been about five or six different
teams. I know, and he's really good. And you've got to go find, like, I think it's the, I'm going to play it out so I get Carson the rest of this year, and I get him all of next year before I even have to make a decision on it.
Yep.
I'm not making a decision early. I'm going to wait and see. I can always franchise tag him for a year if I need to, see whether he gets hurt during that time. And in the meantime, the Raheem Mosterts are just, they're out there, or the Matt Breidas, or the, like, yeah, some of them get hurt, and they're not all great, but... If
Kenyon
you got a
Drake scoring four touchdowns,
if you've got a good enough offensive line and you commit to them, you can get something that is a reasonable facsimile of what you're getting from Chris Carson, without having to pay an additional $13 million.
Chris Carson is getting to that to me on that special end of things.
Yeah,
that for now 2 years, not six games, not eight games, not Kenyon Drake or not Mostert, not these guys that flash for 4 or 5 weeks or whatever. This is a guy that last season had over 1,000 yards rushing and was a big reason why you got to the playoffs. This is a year this guy is having what other running backs in the league would you rather have right now than Chris Carson?
I'm not answering this question on the grounds that it may incriminate me later. I've been busted on this one before.
I'm falling in that hole.
Yeah, maybe. Kyle, why don't you answer
maybe
this one since you always know the right answer.
Maybe Zeke Elliott, but not at $15 million. Like, give me this dude, because this guy is absolutely the punishing.
Yeah, for the value, Kyle, would you rather have Zeke Elliott at $15 million or Chris Carson at $700,000?
Chris Carson.
Yeah.
All day
what
long.
What about Thomas Rawls?
Now I've got a wild card for you.
Would you rather have Thomas Rawls for free? Yeah, no, I look, you make a really compelling argument. At the end of the day, I think I've just learned my lesson because I want to pay everybody, and then afterwards you kind of end up getting burned from it.
You do, but you get less burned when you get a good team-friendly a deal that, you know, is not a low ball to the player.
I know.
Look at the deal that Tyler Lockett.
But I got him for two more years
Lockett.
Anyway, man. I got two more years of the three or four that he's likely to be at his best. I just don't know that I can commit to that, and I love Carson. It's not personal. I love the way he runs. Did you hear him on with Bob David Moore this week?
Mm-mm.
He was a great interview, and he's not a particularly gregarious, energetic, excitable fellow. In fact, most of his conversations about how he can't wait to get home, go to sleep.
He talks very quietly,
and he really likes
spoken nature.
He's like, oh man, like the reason I don't celebrate is I want to go back and save energy.
Just glad to get the win.
But he's compelling. Like, he's a compelling figure.
You know what it's like to carry 900 pounds, like, on your back and plow through and do some of the things that he still does? Guess what you'd want to do, too?
Yeah.
Let me go to bed, man. I'm tired.
I'm good.
Spend my energy in this interview.
I just toted it 25 times in that game, like, running through fools, running over fools, running, like, into and around.
They were asking him about being on the team plane, right? They're all watching the end of the Niners game. You heard about how exciting this was.
Oh, you saw the pictures. Oh, yeah.
They're like, what? How? He's like... Man, I started watching my phone. It wasn't when I went to sleep, and then I heard everybody cheering, and I woke up for a minute, and I was like, oh,
nice.
Cool, they won. And then I went back to sleep.
You know, by the way, you know else is sleeping on that plane back from Carolina? The whole row, because I saw it in the preseason game. Fluke. I think Fluke and Carson, it's a competition of who is out first. Carson up against the window, and Fluke gets like the whole row. They got that plane that goes two seats, five seats, two seats, and Fluke gets the whole five.
There's all no nine. Way that's enough room.
And recline. I think he gets two rows. Like, he gets the whole five across.
That's not wide enough, though. Like, what does a row look like for... I don't know.
Yeah, I'm big boy.
All right. Well, there you go. That is that's where the Seahawks are at. Amazingly, 11-3. And Howdy, you are right. They are a fantastic, wonderful, fun, but also a team that requires a defibrillator because they are maddening while you're watching them and super, super fun and exciting once it's done. We'll be right back. All right, Brock, a little potpourri of sorts, some Josh Gordon conversation, a little bit about the Niners, some Mariners. I'm going to see if we can throw a whole bunch of things into a short set, but I need some help. As I've mentioned on this show before, I am not necessarily handy, okay?
It's really?
It is not my – I've become the great Christmas spirit and all that.
Like, Mr. Christmas. Yes.
You are not the Christmas spirit.
I am.
No.
I don't think no. Let's not go that far.
No, no, no.
The great Christmas spirit. It's my new nickname.
You were searching for words right there. That was not correct.
It's not right?
None of us.
I am the great Christmas spirit.
Okay, whatever. All
right. Here's what I could use some help. And I have a problem at home with a door. And I'm not sure what to do about this. So I was hoping that between the three of you guys, you might be able to help me and then maybe the people out there. And I can even show you the picture of what's going on.
Is it the strike plate?
Well, isn't it Tirico? Should we get Tirico on?
Tirico is fantastic with this stuff. Yes, the strike. He's the one who taught us about the strike plate.
About the strike plate. Well, they taught Tirico about the strike plate.
The door to my bedroom has, like all doors, three door hinges, right?
Important door.
And often the screws come loose, which is okay, fine, and I have screwed them back in. I understand how to do that, to use a screwdriver, tighten the screws, and make the door swing a little bit more freely. But over time, this happened long before we've ever lived there, people had done a really bad job with the screws in there and let it go. And so the holes are now larger and larger, and the screws aren't doing anything when they go into the hole.
Mm.
Easy answer. Get a larger or longer screw, right? So it goes even deeper in. Unfortunately, I've tried that, and eventually
you get right through the frame itself.
Yeah, you get to metal. There's like a metal stud there or something. Like it won't go any farther. What do I do? Because my door is now nearly hanging off. How do you rehang a door with the hinges at a different spot?
Oh, you can't rehinge it. You can't put the hinges in a different spot.
You can't do it.
No.
So what do I do?
You're either going. You're going to have some bad, bad options that you're not going to want to take into account mm-hmm. here.
There's no
one,
good answer to this.
Take
is there?
The frame off.
The frame.
Get a new frame.
I don't think that's a real thing.
You take the trims out.
You can't
you
take
pull
the frame
door off. Frame
it's
out,
part of the wall.
You put a new frame in if you like your door specifically.
No, it's just a random door.
Okay, so more likely than not, you're going to get a brand new door that comes with a frame on it because almost all doors come with the frame.
Oh, I see. And then have somebody just reframe the whole thing.
You put the whole assembly back
in.
And you shim it out
and
on every
shake
side.
It all about. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You do the hokey pokey.
No, I get
you can
it.
Do
I
that
it.
On your own. I've done a handful of those.
Or
it's
you get
a hassle,
or you get
you
Gorilla Glue.
Gorilla Glue?
The janky option would be to pull all of your screws out, take your door off.
Yep.
Then you're going to take a small drill bit, like a wider drill bit, and you're going to actually
go through the
sink
strike
a hole
plate.
A little bit. No, you're going to sink a hole a little bit.
What do you mean sink it?
Like you're going to create so where the screw head is.
Yeah.
You're going to sink it in a little bit deeper, so you're going to like make a little like a jig almost for that thing to fit into, and then you're going to stick a wall anchor into that hole,
okay.
And then you're going to put
a wall anchor. Yeah. That's a good idea.
It's gonna be tough because you're dealing with a limited space,
right?
And that wall anchor sticks out. That's why you have to sink the wall anchor in with a specific drill bit. It's going to be complicated. It's janky.
I knew that there was not going to be a good answer to this
Gorilla
question.
Gorilla glue.
Gorilla glue.
Or super glue.
just super glue it to the wall.
Yes.
Hey, now it shuts. No problem. This is great. Look, I want the door to my bedroom to shut. It's important to me.
Uh-huh.
And so this is becoming a bigger and bigger problem in my life. Keep the kids out.
Good job, Howdy.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. From the ridiculous to the more serious, what do we make of the Josh Gordon story that comes out this week? First of all, I don't know that, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know that I can ever remember a player being simultaneously suspended for both PEDs and drugs of abuse.
Correct.
I can't think of it. Maybe it's happened, and I'm sure you could come back to some players who probably did both things, but I can't remember that. And obviously his long, long history with this.
Eighth.
So I, you know, most of the response I've heard and seen has been with a lot of sympathy or feeling bad for him and, you know, sorry that he wasn't able to make the most of this. Is that where you land?
To a degree. I probably land that sometimes your greatest blessings are your greatest curses. And that guy is so physically, freakishly blessed. I mean, he's just so
what in the
gifted.
World does he need PEDs for? The idea, and that's the thing. A lot of the sympathy has been about the abuse. Okay, like I get it. I've been addicted to things. In my case, it's just nicotine. But I understand that addictions are an illness. I can kind of roll with that. In my own world, I've kind of found that willpower can get over that. And when I slip up, it's because of my willpower. But I understand that not everybody's like that, and things are different for people.
And the
some
chemical
people are
dependencies. For
yeah,
different
it's a very real thing.
Chemistry, so very real.
I'm not going to sit here and criticize him for having essentially being a drug addict. Fine, but the other part of it is the PEDs. I don't have a tremendous amount of sympathy there, especially because he's not taking something so that he can just barely hang on and stay in the league. right? Those are the guys I always have sympathy for. I remember talking, we've told the story before about Fernando Viña, who was in the Mitchell Report, old second baseman for the Cardinals and some other teams. And he told me straight up, yeah, I took PEDs so that I could compete because otherwise I was going to be out of the league. Yep. And I wanted to be in the league, so I took PEDs. I'm like, yeah, I can kind of see that. Like I get it. But that's not Josh Gordon. He's not taking this so that he can hang on. He's taking PEDs so that he can like look like DK Metcalf, which he already does.
Or couldn't it be Adderall as well?
Exactly.
Doesn't that fall under with Richard Sherman and all those guys?
Yes, it could be. That's exactly the thought that I had. But yeah, I think that there is absolutely empathy and compassion because that guy has demons he cannot defeat. And they go back to like teenage years, middle school years.
Sure.
I do. I've been around enough of these guys, especially in college and pro sports, that you see these incredibly gifted. They are so talented. That has been their blessing. Yet at the same time, and you know, another guy that comes to mind is a little bit of Felix Hernandez, who is so gifted. The game came so easy to him. Did he put in all of the required work always necessary? And to me, that was a no. No, because it just came naturally. I just threw 98. My ball moved crazy. Like this is just a talent I have. Josh Gordon is 6'3" and 220 with no body fat and could jump out of a gym. And if you watch that documentary, right, and you just see the physical skill set that he has. Oh, and then by the way, he makes a catch last Sunday, unlike anything that I've ever seen on a football field. Like you take 100 receivers and you run that fast and you get full extension and you catch it on the bare end of your fingertips.
Crazy.
And then in midair at that size, got to pull it all the way in and then have full contact with the ground. You defeated gravity. You defeated physics. You defeated everything. Like you're just not supposed to be able to do that. And that's where it just really stinks. Gosh, man, you have this immense talent that's just unfortunately wasted. These demons have wasted it. They've taken it. This curse that you just cannot overcome. And it just stings. And you know what? Sadly, there was also a little cynicism that popped in my mind. And that was, okay, now I know why the Seahawks didn't go all in.
Oh, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, I know. Sad.
Took 10.5 years, but finally, a little bit of cynicism shows up.
Cynicism.
Look at what your Christmas spirit.
So refreshing.
The Christmas spirit has injected me with your cynicism.
The great Christmas spirit.
The great Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
Has now been injected with your cynicism.
Great.
To the point where I'm like, well, now I know why. And it wasn't like they knew this test. I do believe them. You know, they don't have a real heads up. Nah, with a player like him who's getting tested all the time, I think it was more of a matter of, hey, we're going to be real careful here.
Because there's a chance that this thing ends any second.
We're not going to hitch our wagon to this. We're not going to build our offense around it. We're not going to put 10 plays a game.
Use it when you can. Yes. But you better make sure Malik Turner's still in the mix because you're going to need him when it's
and
all
DK
said
and is going to get nine bites at the apple and he'll get one.
Yeah.
Because we're going to have DK a long time. This guy, any given day, and it turned out to be on a Monday early in a week, he's done.
Pete Carroll has such a great vision for these things. I mean, honestly, Howdy and I were talking about it earlier. He might be the best coach outside of the 3 hours of a game in football.
At all levels.
Honestly, I really mean that. Mm-hmm. I think he might be the best at motivating, thinking big picture, developing young players into... I mean, the Rashim Green one. Rashim Green might be the best example on this team this year.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that none of us believed in for squat.
Is he their leading sacker?
I think he might.
I don't know. Rasheem added one more. I think he may be four and a half.
But I mean, none of us believed Rasheem Green. Pete does, and he develops him, and he puts him out there, and eventually, by mid to late season, he pays great dividends, and he's not the only one. Pete, you know, dealt with the Super Bowl hangover, dealt eventually with the Marshawn Lynch thing and Earl Thomas saying it was possible. He dealt with all of that stuff and handles it as well as anybody. He was the first to commit to a player like Russell Wilson and turn him into what really should have been an MVP a couple of times. No, Pete does all of that.
The coaching staff that he cultivates and develops and keeps together, and you never hear friction between offensive and defensive guys.
I mean, maybe Belichick is better at this than him. He'd be the only name. It's just he's Bill Belichick, but Pete is at the very least right there with Belichick as the best non-in-game coaches in football. And I agree with Howdy at all levels, not just even in the NFL. He's one of the best. And he did it at USC.
Yep.
It's not the same in-game. I've become very frustrated with Pete Carroll, the in-game coach.
You don't say.
But
you have?
But this is a good example, Brock, when you bring that up, of them not being willing to go all in on it, of Pete just really understanding the big picture and the big vision of what you need to do.
Yep. And he was sad. You could tell his coach had to handle
that
news.
He legitimately
has some empathy and some compassion. When Bill Belichick cut him, I don't think there was one fiber of attachment.
See ya.
Yeah, okay, you're done. we'll bring in the next guy. And, you know, there's just none. But for Pete, I think he genuinely, at his age, at his stage, with all that he's accomplished, still has a level of empathy and compassion for these guys. Unique.
Did they need him? I mean, the one thing you can say, though, about Josh Gordon in the few, what did he play, four games while he was here? I don't think they win the San Francisco game without him.
Like, huge third down conversions.
He made the two of the three or four biggest plays in that game.
Yep.
I don't think they win that game without him. Now, maybe somebody else runs that slant, but I saw Malik Turner when they needed him on a big third down the week previous, and it was not the same as when you needed to hit Josh Gordon on an eight-yard slant to get a first down on a big third down late in the game. I don't know whether they win the Carolina game. They probably do, but he made one of the biggest plays in that game, which changed field. You know, huge play. It led to a touchdown. Yeah. So
that's where you're going to miss him. You're going to miss him very specifically in third down. Got to have it one-on-one, big body. You're going to win. DK is capable of it. There's some inconsistency because he's a rookie. David Moore is not that guy. Jerron Brown's not that guy. Malik Turner's not necessarily that guy. John Ursua is not that guy. Lockett is, right? I think Russ really trusts him, especially in the slot.
And you've lost Will Dissly, and you know, Jacob Hollister, maybe. I mean, you're telling me that in a big third down, your two best options are Jacob Hollister and Tyler Lockett? I love Tyler Lockett. I mean, he's not like an afterthought on that list. He's a great third down option. But,
and it's going to be DK. DK, you're a grown man now.
That's going to make me nervous, though.
Yep, you're no longer a rookie.
When you have a third and nine that you need to convert to stay on the field late.
And it either has to go to DK Metcalf or Malik Turner.
Because they're going to double Tyler Lockett.
We saw that exact moment at San Francisco on third down. The ball went right through DK's hands.
Right.
Yep.
So yeah, I will say that is... You know, it's a bummer, obviously, for him personally. It's a bummer for the Seahawks. They could really use that guy quite a bit, and especially as you're looking at maybe spending a couple of weeks here without the player that has completely changed your secondary, and when he's out there, Quandre Diggs has made your team good defensively. And when he's not out there, they're bad.
Yep.
They were really bad against Carolina after he and eventually Bobby left. They're bad. Especially because, you know, you watch that game, it's like, well, Trey Flowers held his own, and give credit, Akeem King wasn't like a major problem in the game or anything. If anything, he kind of was invisible, which is a good thing.
Yep.
You got to see your guy, Ugo Amadi, show up a little bit. But you take Quandre Diggs out of that out of that secondary, and everything changes for them.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a hard game against Arizona. Arizona can move the ball. They're going to make some plays. Their receivers, Kyler's playing with confidence. They're going to score. Russell, you better score 30. Right, if you're everything that everybody's hyped you up to be this year, and we'll chat with Colin Cowherd, he still thinks you're the MVP of the league. Like, hey, man, this is it. It's come down to it now. This is 2 weeks, and it's your opportunity. And much like you did in Carolina, where you score 3 touchdowns in the first half, you score 30 points, you're going to probably more than likely have to score 30 in both of these games at home in some inclement weather to go be the number one seed.
Well, inclement weather shows up this time of year, right? This has been a very strange year in the NFL because this is usually right around the time, mid-December, where I make the comment to you like, oh, Brock, I've seen this movie before, right? We've seen it, the dome team or high-octane offense passing the ball all over the place. This is right about the time of year where those 390-yard passing days go away and they're not physical and they've been built for finesse and the Colts go into the tank or the Rams go into the tank or whoever it's been over the years who've built their team this way. Not so much this season.
Nope.
The best teams, even the ones with the great quarterbacks, have not built themselves entirely in a passing game. The Saints, who just flat out destroyed Indy on Monday Night Football. They're not built to just have Drew Brees throw the ball over. They can. Drew can obviously throw and do everything Drew Brees does, but they run the ball and Kamara and a pretty good defense. The Chiefs, for all of the Patrick Mahomes, they play physically and their defense runs around a little bit.
The Ravens, the Bills, are all the 49ers, physical.
Yeah,
the Seahawks, the Cowboys, if they actually do it and when they actually feature Ezekiel Elliott and play with the best run blocking O-line in the league and the best running back and play to that.
Even the Packers, not just Aaron Rodgers doing his thing. They like to hand the ball off. Aaron Jones kid is good. So
they're all seeking balance, and then there's a number of them this year that have gone beyond that tipping point. That being the Seahawks, that being the Ravens, that being the 49ers. 49ers
just all in on it.
Yeah, that may have even lost that game to the Falcons, right? If we were a 49ers radio station, you could play back a lot of the tapes of Seahawk fans, of Danny O'Neill's columns, of saying, man, when you play it that close to the vest, guess what you invite? Teams that you're much better than, you invite them to keep it really close.
I don't think the Niners have a choice. I just don't think Jimmy Garoppolo
what did he throw against the Saints? Threw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns and put the game on him on the road in New Orleans. against Drew Brees. And
yeah, and at the
you.
End of it, it took the Saints scoring too early against their defense, and George Kittle
down.
And George Kittle making a miraculous play
yes.
on fourth down to take them into. I think if you give Jimmy Garoppolo too many attempts in a wide open offense, he's going to make a lot of mistakes.
Jimmy Garoppolo and the Niners against the Rams will not employ the game plan they just did against the Falcons. They will not do it.
And if Jimmy Garoppolo throws the ball all over the place, they'll pick him off.
And the Bosas of the world are going to say, no, we're not doing that, man. We let a lesser team play in this game because we were so conservative and threw it 13 times to the tight ends, 3 to the receivers. We ran it. We played it close to the vest. We're not doing that anymore. We're going to be the number one seed.
They should throw it like 30 times to the tight end. What is that guy's deal?
Unbelievable.
Why can't anybody tackle him? He's like Mark Bavaro, Ben Coates, and like a few other guys all rolled into one.
Gronk.
What is his deal?
Well, he runs 4-5. How many times has Pete Carroll told you about Aaron Donald running 4-5?
Why the heck
size?
Was he like a sixth round pick or whatever? Like, how did that guy slip as deep as he did? He is a freak show.
Yes.
And he didn't play the last time Seahawks played them.
No.
That's correct.
No.
He is a difference maker at tight end.
You think?
Yes, yeah. I do. Yeah. I mean, every time you watch him, the plays where he just, like, refuses to go down.
Correct.
Honestly, Mark Bavaro is the name that comes to my mind, and Ben Coates.
But fast.
Yeah, I'm not
it's
saying.
Unbelievable. He's Bavaro, Coates, physical.
Yes.
But then he's fast like Vernon Davis was in his heyday. He's a combination of those dudes. And, yeah, and it's. Oof.
He's really good and completely changes the game. And I don't know that you've watched a lot of the Seahawks defense, but a couple of the problems they have. Are with like
what do you mean, Mr. Christmas little, spirit?
With little bootlegs and stuff, where the tight ends and people drag across the other way. I feel like that might be an issue in a couple weeks
when
they play against the Niners.
Since when has that been an issue?
Let's take care of the Cardinals
last
first.
10 years, maybe.
All right, I said that Pete Carroll's having some trouble with in-game coaching. What's Perry Farrell's deal?
Why?
Same thing. Lead singer.
That's three
Perry
times.
Perry Farrell cat.
Yes.
Where's that Farrell cat? What's his deal?
Do you know who Perry Farrell is?
No.
He was the lead singer of Jane's Addiction, who started the big concert. Whatchamacallit?
Lollapalooza.
Lollapalooza. He started Lollapalooza.
Wow, yes. Total guess.
Perry
I did
Farrell.
Not think that
Perry Farrell. Farrell.
He was Jane's Addiction and Porno for Pyros, and he started he started Lollapalooza.
Anyway, Jane's Addiction.
Why did they stop running all their little like jet sweeps and stuff?
I don't know.
Like it. If they had just done that, I think they might beat the Seahawks by 30. What are they doing? Why did they stop doing that?
I know.
And I don't mean at the end. At the end, they needed to throw, and they succeeded doing that also. But in the second quarter and third quarter, when the Seahawks were kind of like getting a lead on them,
yeah.
The Panthers just stopped doing what worked.
Yes.
Why?
The Seahawks are 11-3. They won. Don't worry about it. Don't
Why
worry
do
about
they
Perry.
Do that?
Get to the rest of your potpourri.
How many?
What else? No, what
how
else
many,
you got?
If you are either Arizona or San Francisco, how many jet sweep type plays are you running in the game?
Well, the 49ers do that. It is baked in.
Okay.
They major in it. So,
how many times will the Niners do it?
Well, we see that action, that conflict of two different plays, as Pete Carroll described, the challenge was stopped.
25 times in a game?
It's not just a jet sweep. They don't just block jet sweep. It is a run, and that is the other option off of it. So it's really a run-run option. How many times will you see that concept? Yeah, 30. 25 or 30. That's what
in
they
a
do.
Game?
Oh, then they'll bootleg off of it,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, so just
because the Seahawks can't stop bootlegs either.
That's a problem.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Like this defense has to.
Clowney
figure out
and
how to
Ziggy
stop that
will
stuff.
Be back. Don't worry.
That'll help.
That will help.
That'll help.
And Michael Kendricks,
especially
Michael
Clowney.
Michael Kendricks will help
because Clowney sets an edge,
and Kendricks sets an edge.
Yes,
so they'll be better.
All right. Well, I like to hear that. Yeah. That makes me.
Can
feel
you give
a
me a Mariners
good.
Rumor? You really have?
Well,
a
no. We just talked a little bit about
what
it throughout
we got?
The
what
week.
We got?
Just
what
the Kyle Seager rumors heated up. I mean, a week ago we were talking Mitch Haniger, right? And it was like. One of the things I threw out there was, well, maybe if it was a way of getting rid of Kyle Seager's contract, that, you know, that would might maybe worth your time.
Okay.
The winter meetings, though, the one name that did start to percolate was Kyle Seager's, and for good reason. Anthony Rendon goes for gigantic money. You're now going to see him 19 times a year, you know, right there with Mike Trout and Pujols and Cole Calhoun
Holtzen,
right? And everybody
else. He was
else.
In the Holtzen draft, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah, they looked at him.
And I remember talking to them during that draft about what. So Garrett Cole went number one overall. They didn't have a chance to get Garrett Cole. But they took Danny Holtzen number two. And the reason, and this is just ironic, what are you going to do? They were worried about Rendon's health.
Yeah.
He was a really good player. He was probably the guy that was most likely to go second in that draft, but he had had major ankle issues. And it was, there was a legitimate concern that he's just going to be one of those guys that wouldn't stay healthy. And I think they wanted pitching, right? They had taken Ackley, I think the year before, maybe it was 2 years before.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to add pitching to it. And so they couldn't get Cole. they went with Holtzen, and he was as supposed to be close to major league ready,
stuff
college
was
pitcher, polished.
There was talk that year that he could come up in like September.
That's right.
As
maybe
your fifth
maybe
star.
Wasn't the highest upside guy in that draft, but had the stuff that was closest. The guy
and you know what else he did?
He just gets hurt. What are you going to do?
He posted. He posted
he
in college.
And what are you going to do? The guy blows out his arm three times. I mean, like. You can't.
So does Seager get moved? Is Kyle Seager in spring training?
Well,
when we're
once
down there?
Rendon,
when the sun
once
rises.
Rendon was off the market, anybody wanted a third baseman starts looking around and saying, "Okay, well, maybe there's a way, and can I do this?" I think that there's a chance, but I don't think the one note in Ken Rosenthal's column that concerned me
poison
was,
pill.
No, I know about the poison pill. It was that the Mariners would give up some sort of a prospect to make it happen.
Oh.
I don't want to hear anything about that.
No.
Like, they don't need to get anything back in order to move Kyle Seager, but you cannot give up a prospect of value, give up Kyle Seager, and not get something back. I don't want any part of that. I mean, having him around is not ideal, but it's not the end of the world, at least for another couple of years. Don't be giving up even a small piece of your future.
And Ryan Divish came out today in the Times as well. And said that based on talking to some scouts that he also had found that there was some interest in Kyle Seager, and that because Josh Donaldson's the best option and it's looking potentially like he's going to make $19 million
and he's got major injury concerns also and his teammates can't stand him.
The teams are looking at Kyle Seager and saying $15 million a year on average over 3 years. That's more palatable for a guy who looks at his best physically that he's ever been, and the actual talent scouting says they actually believe in him more than they ever have.
And I think Kyle Seager, look, I have some issues with Kyle Seager in general. I think he'd be better on a good team. I mean, I don't think he's cut out for the rebuild.
When no one's paying attention to him and he could just kind of go out there and play his game.
He doesn't want to lead.
Wasn't he a second baseman coming up and then he put on the weight
to
go
second,
play third?
He's played both.
What if he, now that he's the new slim trim, not here in Seattle, but just as a trade.
I don't think he can still do that.
He's so good at third base defensively
too.
He's a real asset.
Yeah, and I think at this age, I don't see his athleticism returning, even if he lost some of the weight to play second base. But look, he could still be a pretty valuable piece for a good team, a team that is contending right now. I can understand why teams would be out there looking for him. I wouldn't be giving up anything in addition, but I wouldn't need to eat that much money either. Like, I just kind of let the guy move it along, and if you can save $10 or $20 million or a little bit more, great. I mean, go use that for something when you're ready to do so. I think that makes some sense. So. That's what's going on in Mariners world. We'll see if Jerry DePoto will make another deal or two now that the winter meetings are in the rearview mirror. Brock, it's been a while since we've talked to Colin Cowherd. Woo! This guy used to speak to us when we were on the radio, and now he's still going to stoop to talking to us on a podcast. We'll do it next. When you started off, I mean, you're like a big radio person. Now you're just going on lame Seattle podcasts.
I used to be able to do this in a hoodie. Those were the days, weren't they?
Exactly.
Now you can still coach in the NFL wearing a hoodie.
Right.
But in our business now, we have to do ties and stuff.
We'll see for how much longer. I don't know. You get caught cheating like 7 times. Eventually, they take your hoodie away. I think that's part of the rules.
I think they're going to get tagged a little bit. I wouldn't be shocked if they take away a top draft pick.
Yeah, and at the end of it, this is always, this is their Wikipedia page. Like, this is how you're remembered forever. And we're seeing a lot of these Wikipedia pages change right now. We saw Drew Brees, right, last night or earlier this week with more Peyton Manning records starting to fall, and Drew Brees' Wikipedia page changes and Peyton's changes. What do you think Russell's looks like when it's all said and done?
Well, I think, actually, if you go to the last 10 years, Russell Wilson and Brees, Peyton Manning and Brady controlled the AFC for 15 years. If you go to the last 10 years, and Russell hasn't been in the NFC quite 10 years, but if you go to the last 10 years in the NFC, Russell and Brees have 3 Super Bowl appearances. I think it's 8 division titles and 15 playoff wins. And between the two of them, the only home playoff loss, they changed a rule in the NFL. So, I mean, to me, Russell and Brees are becoming Peyton Manning and Brady, as that they're controlling a conference. And Aaron Rodgers does not control the conference. That's why I've been saying this now. I think I've said it in your show. I think Russell and Brees are better than Aaron Rodgers. That used to be called a hot take. Now it's the right take. When I watch Brees, I think of Russell Wilson. I'm leading my show today saying this. Name the quarterback in the NFL. The quarterback who was a number one high school, number one college, number one NFL draft pick, and his entire trip to the NFL, not a lot of speed bumps, very linear. Matt Stafford, who's been largely a disappointment. Drew Brees and Russell Wilson are the logo of the NFL. Overlooked, had to transfer, ignored by big schools, don't go in the first round. I mean, Drew Brees and Russell Wilson, a little too small, prodigious college numbers. No reasonable person would deny how great they were, but they dropped obstacles, not linear, told no. Brees got moved off his first team. I see Russell Wilson, and I think Russell's got another 7 to 8 great years, and Brees probably has at least 2 to 3. This is the best I've seen Brees in years. The hand injury actually gave him a 5-6 week break, and so I when I look at Brees, and I see Russell.
Colin, I heard your very passionate plea yesterday, still or earlier this week, for Russell as the MVP of this league. The Seahawks are 11-3. They've got a +26 scoring differential. If Russell Wilson is not the quarterback, and Geno Smith is quarterback in the Seattle Seahawks this year, what's their record?
I'm not sure they have a win. It makes no sense. Nothing about being Seattle being a number one seed makes sense. Number one, they're in a division with Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay. They're in a division with nothing but competent, dynamic quarterbacks. Their pass blocking is 31st in the league. Their defense total is 27. Wide receivers, Will Disley is still third leading receiver on a team. He hasn't played in a month and a half. Nothing says they should be number one in the tougher NFC conference. They are because of Russell Wilson. Lamar Jackson's fun and cool and the new story, and that's what the media loves. The media loves stories, but they've got a great offensive line and a great defense and a great running game and unbelievable tight ends. He's got all sorts of help. They could win games with us. They could win games with Andy Dalton. Seattle's not winning any games with Andy Dalton.
Right, that's not true.
So what does valuable mean? Russell's the most valuable component individual in the National Football League.
I'm 95% of the way with you on that. I think you make a lot of good points. You got to give Chris Carson the one thing you have to say about the Seahawks.
He's a nice player, yes.
Yeah, he's another 1,000-yard rusher, and they were putting up the stat the other day that it's just he and Ezekiel Elliott with the most 100-yard games during the time that he's been in the league. I think you got to say their running game is good, but other than that, I'm with you. I mean, their defense doesn't get to the quarterback. They throw landmines in front of themselves every time they're about to win. They make more stupid decisions and do more dumb things on a football field than any good team I've ever watched in I think any sport. I've never seen an NFL team, and you've talked about things like this. NFL teams don't generally play stupid and still find ways to win, and yet this team does. How? Is it just that Russell's good?
Yeah, I mean, I always said Pete Carroll's Mike Tomlin. Both Super Bowls, they'll be Hall of Famers. They're very big energy, sometimes a little light on the details. You know, it's funny. Tom Brady, nothing – they can't draft a receiver that works with him. Everybody works with Russell Wilson. Will Disley was a defensive end, then a blocking tight end. I think 1 year in Washington he had 2 catches. He goes to the Seahawks, and you're like, man, Will Disley's good. Everybody works with Russell Wilson. It's like LeBron. Everybody works with LeBron. J.R. Smith was a knucklehead. He was almost out of the league. LeBron picks him up, brings him off the bench. They win a title with J.R. Smith. I think he's just unique. It's so funny in our business. I'm doing 30 columns a day. You guys know this. I'm just having strong opinions all day, and you miss on some. But I can remember saying this like 3 and 4 years ago. I'm like, I like Russell Wilson better than Aaron Rodgers. He's never hurt. I like his leadership skills. And is it me, or does every receiver work with Russell Wilson? It's almost hard not to have that opinion today. You really have to love Rodgers and the Packers. Russell is just there are some LeBron qualities. He never gets hurt. He's good with everybody. You know, it's funny. We all know, I mean, Brock, you know this. When you play in the NFL, West Coast teams always struggle in the Eastern time zone in early games. Yep. Like, it's just everybody understands that. And Russell Wilson's now 17-4 in Eastern time zone games. That's from a city, Seattle, that's the most geographically isolated. They're not just a West Coast team. It's up in Seattle. I mean, he solved the enigma in the NFL. Send him east, 10 o'clock Pacific game. He's unbelievable. So it's just, he breaks all the rules. That's what, that's, he's a disruptor. He's an outlier. He's, that's what, you know, I've been saying this for 3 or 4 years, not because I'm from Seattle. I think people know, if you listen to me, I criticize Seattle and Portland teams all the time. Russell is unbelievable.
Hey, Colin, you're big on trends, and I've been bugging Brock about this for the last few weeks. Do you think there will come a time here in the next few years where the statuesque quarterback is done? Not to say there won't still be a few in the league, but
yeah, we have a convergence of things happening.
Right. It's done.
With bad offensive lines, the new CBA limits practices, the offensive line's the unit that needs the most practice. You have high school now, the best athletes all want to be quarterback or wide receiver. I mean, kids in California are smart. Okay, they see it. Running backs can't get a second contract. Quarterbacks get a fourth. Receivers get a third. It's where the money's at. The game's getting more perimeter-oriented. In California next year, the top 100 players in California, you have like 9 quarterbacks and 20 receivers and like 3 running backs and like, you know, 4 defensive tackles. This is the reality of the NFL. This is the reality of football, is that offensive line play is regressing. It's not an either or. Daniel Jones is about the least mobile you can be going forward.
And yet this draft class is full of a bunch of guys a little bit like him. Colin, you love Tua. I mean, Tua's can run a little bit. Jacob Eason up here, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow is not going to run a blazing 4.74.
No, but I would argue, though, they're athletic. Now yes. Herbert was an All-State basketball player. He moves pretty well.
Yeah.
They're not. He's much more athletic than Eli, Phillip Rivers. They're in the Jameis Winston athletic ability. They can move. They're pocket guys, but they can move. Now, I think Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields are better than all these three.
Yes.
I think this is a good quarterback draft. I think Burrow's good. I don't think he's special. I don't buy all the hype on Burrow. I mean, last year he completed 57% of his throws. Tua, I like him. Tua's my favorite, but he's got injury issues. Jalen Hurts, I think he's a backup in the NFL, maybe a bottom starter. Mm-hmm. I like Justin Herbert, but he's erratic. I don't know what I get series to series, play to play.
So last thing here, you got to run. Do the Seahawks beat Arizona and San Francisco? Do they really do this? They're 11-3. Is it this inexplicable with all those numbers that you rattled off? You really think they're going to win these last two at home and be the number one seed in the NFC?
No, I don't. I think they'll probably lose to San Francisco, though the Niners are banged up. Then they'll go on the road like to a Dallas. They'll win. Then they'll go, I think Seattle's going to end up in the NFC Championship. Wow. I do. I just think, you know, it's very reliant on Russell. I don't think San Francisco's as reliant on their quarterback. I don't think New Orleans is as reliant on Breeze. I mean, even despite last night, you know, Breeze last couple of years is throwing the ball less. I think why I don't like Seattle in the Super Bowl is I just think they're too dependent on Russell. It's what Green Bay has been for most of the last 10 years with Aaron. This is the first Green Bay team in a decade that's not totally reliant on Aaron. That's why, you know, it's kind of interesting. I think Kansas City has mostly been last 2 years too reliant on Mahomes. They don't run the ball. They can't stop the run. So I think it what will ultimately lose Seattle will lose either to a Saints or a Baltimore. I just think those teams can beat you in more ways, and I think there are limitations to even Russell's, you know, his greatness.
Yeah, two teams they've lost to already this year, and tough matchups for them, along with the Rams, who just seem to be a nightmare for the Seahawks. So hopefully, you know, they don't have to see the Rams again in the playoffs, because that would actually make
me
nervous.
Jimmy Lake's going to be great. He can recruit. I know that.
Yep. I think it's going to be, yeah.
Brock, you're asking the wrong person. Colin, don't ask Brock.
I think he's going to be great.
Just ask Brock if anything at UW is going to be good. He's going to say yes.
The question is whether or not he'll be elite. He'll be great. They're great.
Of course.
Can he be elite? That'll be the
Brock
question.
Brock thinks it's better that they have Jimmy Lake
than
Chris Peterson,
Colin.
So
see
it doesn't
buddy.
Matter.
Talk to you later.
Oh, I miss this music. I love which is better.
Behind door number one with the hinges that have been jerry-rigged. You
so
get
frustrating.
And behind door number two with a new door jam.
All right, which is better? I teased this one earlier, so let's actually ask it. Which is better, Tyler Lockett's body contorting catch in the end zone earlier this year, or Josh Gordon's not quite diving but laying out catch on the fingertips from this past weekend?
The actual reception, Josh Gordon's is better. The overall operation,
right? Because Russell's throw.
Yeah,
I don't know. This was like an. Wouldn't Russell throw the ball over 60 yards?
He threw it 60, but a lot of guys can do that. You put a ton of air on it. You throw it out in front of them. That throw was not that hard. A lot of NFL dudes make that throw. Not many make the throw on the move
right.
to your opposite
arm. But which
arm.
Is a better catch?
The actual catch? Gordon's. It was insane. I mean, you see that a ton. DK's had that this year. You've seen a lot of Seahawks receivers. They get full extension. I can think a bunch. There's six or seven different guys through the years that come to mind. You see them get full extension, and then it's like, ah, oh, darn it. Hit the ground. Ball's out.
So frustrating.
You just can't control the force of the ground, right?
So frustrating. I honestly think it is going to matter that he's not around.
And the fact that he caught that on the tail end of his fingers.
Flicked it back into himself before
yes.
it hit the ground.
It's amazing. Yes. Really, it's incredible. It's
and then, like you absurd. Said, securing that ball midair.
I didn't think there was any chance he caught it. Like, oh just have, watching it live, I'm like, obviously that's going to have hit the ground or whatever. Yes. Nope. He caught it. Absurd. Pretty amazing. Which is better, Brock? We'll go back to what Colin Cowherd asked you. Which is better, Chris Peterson or Jimmy Lake? Which is better?
Chris Peterson. Chris Peterson's wow. winning percentage. Look at it. His resume.
What will you say after the whatever bowl they're in?
By the way, what will I say?
In? Las Vegas Bowl, the Chris Peterson Bowl versus
Mitsubishi Motors
this,
Las Vegas.
This Saturday.
Once Jimmy Lake officially takes over, will you change your answer?
No, but I will. No, he's a first-time head coach. He's got a lot to learn.
Okay.
But I will say this. And you can watch signing day, I believe, is some point this week, midweek. This is going to be one of the
Wednesday
best
morning.
Classes yeah. that the Huskies have ever signed. So when you're like, wow, I thought you were supposed to pay off your peach bomb and all your stupid little rants you give me. Actually, the last two recruiting classes have. Last year's recruiting class.
How come they're not good?
More force. Well, they were freshmen last year. And this class that they're signing right
so?
Now. I think, is ranked eighth or so in the country, number one with Oregon in the Pac-12. So they're paying off.
Wait, number one with Oregon, they're dead tied. One of those teams has got to be ahead.
And well,
I'm suspecting it's Oregon, based off your choice of words right there, that they're tied at first.
They're number one with Oregon?
I believe, were eighth. I think Oregon was ninth. But, you know, this depends on who you want to go with. You want to go with scout, you want to go with rivals,
rankings.
Composite rankings, blah, 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 blah. But all I'm saying is they paid off those runs, at least with the talent on paper, in these last two recruiting classes.
See John Wilner giving Peterson a D-plus this year for
mm-hmm.
his coaching
yeah.
job?
Mm-hmm.
No surprise. Wow.
Gutsy.
Which is probably better than Howdy would have given him.
You look at Stanford and Colorado, those rosters walk into this building right here, and you look at the top 60 guys.
I know, Brock.
Not close.
You're going to get a good look
the
at Cal,
beat the
right?
doors not off close. Both those teams and can sniff you down.
Yes.
So I'm well aware.
You're going to get a good look at Cal.
By the way, did I tell
When's the Red Box Bowl? Or did it already happen?
Whoa.
I don't know.
Goodness.
You know I don't watch bowl games. Did it happen?
No, it's
when is
December
it?
30th, a Monday, 1 o'clock.
That's going to be
on
big.
On Big Fox.
I can't wait to hear
you
it.
You can watch.
Big
I
Fox.
Can't wait. Which is better, new Tiger or old Tiger? And so I'll try to describe, like, old Tiger Woods was the ultimate Terminator, right? No friends, don't care, win at all costs, intimidate everybody, don't talk to me, don't look at me if you're another player. I am going to win everything and take your soul along the way.
Okay.
New Tiger still wins, by the way. He's really hot right now. He just keeps winning right now. Not just obviously winning the Masters, but then he's won a couple of tournaments and was really good.
3-0.
Really, really good here at the President's Cup over the weekend. But he's buddy-buddy with everybody, and he's a leader, and he and Kevin Na are walking in putts together, right? And he's joking around with everybody. But, he was nearly in tears as the captain of the President's Cup team. Now, I don't know if he's as good or as dominant as he was when he was younger, but he's a completely different style of human being.
Well, I know that he's not, and he never will be that dominant again.
No.
No, those days have passed.
So which is better?
When you have a back fusion, Mike, and you try to activate the gluteus, in some weeks it's going to be activated, and some it's not, he's going to be good and bad.
Which is better?
This human one. Yeah, he's human.
This is the first time I've ever considered liking Tiger.
Or as Calabro would say, he's human.
He's human.
Yes. Now, which one is the...
I'm kind of enjoying
Old
him.
Tiger is so much better.
I know there's going to be people who say that.
Old Tiger is way, way, way better. I hated Old Tiger because he was so good.
Right.
And so
he was
different.
He's obviously better at golf.
But he was so different, and he was so dominant.
But
and
I
he took a
root
game
for
and
that
he said,
guy.
I will do this differently and better than it's ever been done before. And I respect that.
I could
that.
Not root for that guy
now
at all.
He is just anybody. He is just another guy.
He's not, though, because he's still Tiger Woods, and the way that everybody reveres him makes it different. I think what's interesting is old Tiger was trying to take it away from an old guard, which is a really compelling story. New Tiger, though, is playing with all of the people that are there because of him. They're not even in golf if it's not for Tiger Woods. They've probably done something else.
What'd you like better, Michael Jordan with the Bulls or Michael Jordan with the Wizards?
Totally different thing. Stop.
It's exactly not.
No, it is not.
Thing. It is identical.
No, what do you like?
Michael Jordan with the Wizards scored 25 points a game.
It didn't win Jack. What this Tiger like? Just won a Masters.
Super glue or Gorilla Glue?
Or Gorilla Glass.
Kyle, did you see the Jordan Spieth commercial?
What? No.
This has blown my mind. Did any of you guys
People
watch
are
this
still paying him for
Direct
Jordan
TV
Spieth?
Jordan Spieth commercial? It's him and Dak Prescott. And he's, okay. it Dallas starts off with him throwing a football to Dak, except for one totally bizarre thing. He throws a football left-handed.
Whoa. He's Brock Heward.
Yep.
Yep. Would you have ever guessed that?
No, not at all.
Maybe it explains the cross-hand putting?
I mean, there's a lot of people that just golf right-handed
Phil
because
Mickelson,
there's no one that can teach
Isn't
him how
Phil
to golf
the opposite?
Left?
Phil throws right-handed. Yeah. And
it explains why Jordan Swing's not the prettiest on tour. Like, he's a lefty. No
it
wonder.
Probably factors into some of the inconsistencies.
How's right. Jordan doing, by the way? Playing any better?
He'll be fine. Not good.
He'll be just fine.
He
very
bad.
He was crushing his opportunity to root on the Americans.
That's right. All of his friends were there, and he rooted them on. He did a better job. He had a better week than Patrick Reed.
He didn't play in the Presidents?
He wasn't invited to play.
Oh, okay. All right.
Don't worry about that.
They needed Xander Schauffele.
Not good. He was honest, but he said the hardest part was that he was missing out on all the group texts.
Those were all going to Patrick
Cantlay
instead.
Like there was
instead.
So much fun going on, and he just wasn't a part of it.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, play better.
Amen.
I think he knows that.
Play left-handed.
Which is better, Steven Strasburg or Garrett Cole?
Garrett Cole is a lot better.
You'll take that? You want that contract?
Oh, yeah. I'll take that. I'll absolutely take that. Because I'm signing either one of those guys just to win a playoff game, win in the playoffs in the first 3 years of the deal.
Has Cole come off of a Tommy John like Strasburg?
No, I don't think so.
All right, so that'll happen in the 9 years.
That's kind of what I think.
Yeah, that will happen. He's going to absolutely
But Strasburg also could have it again. I mean, like, Strasburg could... I don't love either of those contracts. I mean, they're just so long. The Yankees can obviously afford it more than the Nationals can. They're the Yankees. Like, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
But doesn't it have the same feeling of some of those old, like, Kevin Brown, Randy Johnson deals where you're like, okay, good luck. Hope that guy doesn't turn into a pumpkin for you.
9 years.
I hope that's what happens.
9 years.
I really hope so. I hope that, like, because he's a West Coast guy, I hope when he has a couple of bad games and the Yankees fans start booing him and he's getting torched on the radio and all
just
that,
turtles.
That he just turtles. It happens. It happened with Jeff Weaver. Jeff Weaver, I'll never forget the day they acquired Jeff Weaver and whoever was hosting SportsCenter Baseball Tonight that day said, good luck, everybody. Like, it's over. They've got Jeff Weaver, who could not have gone more into the tank as soon as he got there. Now, obviously, he's a lot better than Jeff Weaver, but... There's always a possibility in New York that guys just won't handle it well.
We had Steven Souza in here for a podcast last week for Above and Beyond, and we were talking to him about like that Twitter site, Pitching Ninja, that shows like a Garrett Cole when the ball leaves his hand, and it's the same exact delivery, it's the same release point, and it comes out of his hand, and then it, you know, either goes at 98 or
at
95. Like, what do you do? And he's like, you just guess. You're just guessing. Like, you've got no... Like it used to be, he said, you know, when guys threw 90, 91, you could, you know, kind of sit on it, or you had at least a split second. Now, you do against those guys is you are simply guessing.
Launch angle.
Yeah.
Just go with launch angle.
Right.
Which is better, a winter snowball fight or a summer water balloon fight?
I love a snowball fight because there are forts involved. You can make a snow fort, and that changes the entire game. You've got bases, you've got countries. Yep. It's a whole other ball.
Have you seen that commercial that they're putting out there for the iPhone?
No.
With the crazy snowball fight?
No.
The idea of the commercial is with the new iPhone, you can take better video. And so they basically made like an action movie style 30-second commercial of kids having a snowball fight. You should watch it. It'll be worth your time. It's awesome. It's got like the Inception music in the background. Like, it's really cool.
This may surprise you guys, but I don't like the cleanup of a water balloon. You got all
it's annoying.
Oh, I hate that
Very
part
bad.
Of it. So it's a lot of euphoria and fun, especially on a hot day. And then you're like, oh, got to go clean all this up.
Have you seen those?
I would also say snowballs throw and they fly better than water balloons, I would say, correct. In general. But you take out squirt guns as a part of that. Now, that kind of changes the game
Super
a little bit.
That's true.
A
Backpack.
Good squirt gun where you then can sort of bring in forts and creeping around.
Water balloon slingshots, too.
Yeah. There's
pull those things back, launch them 350 feet.
Plus, they got those new things you just connect to the hose and it just drops
that's
you
exactly
50
what
water
I was going to talk about next.
That's a game changer.
Screw it. That changes.
Turn it on. You got 50 water balloons.
You
just
need
like
Elf
that.
To show up and like make all the snowballs for you. You're all set. That's a good lead in to Christmas Vacation or Christmas Story.
And you can Google this, by the way.
I've never seen A Christmas Story, so I can't.
You never saw A Christmas Story? Didn't see the play either, huh?
Did you go with us to the play? The Bumpus Hounds were there. It was fantastic.
You didn't go to the play?
No.
I left at intermission. It was all right.
I didn't go to that. I've never seen A Christmas Story. I can't. I don't know.
You like Christmas Vacation?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I like Christmas Vacation. For Christmas movies, Heather and I, this weekend, we will watch The Night Before, which I recommend. It's a really funny movie. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Seth Rogen, very funny. The Night Before. I don't think you'd like it.
Have you ever seen that?
No.
It's an adult
But you would Christmas not like movie. It.
Brian. You would not absolutely. Like it, Brian.
It's an adult film?
No, it's no. an adult film.
Yes. Seth Rogen.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah. It's Seth Rogen, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Do
in
yourself
an,
a favor.
An adult
get this
film.
X-rated movie.
Well, you said you wouldn't like it, and you said it's an adult film.
Right. Well, all there's right. like drug paraphernalia and stuff that's going to offend your, you know, virgin eyes
okay,
over there.
Okay, great. All right.
Sensibilities.
Yeah. There's a, it's a pretty funny movie. Which did you think?
Chevy Chase. Yeah, Christmas Vacation. Griswolds. Hewards.
Hewards? The Hewards are like the Griswolds?
Yeah, growing up. A lot
really?
Of similarities. Oh, yeah.
Cousin Eddie.
Oh, yeah. A lot of similarities.
We're not going to be... this is our last podcast for a couple weeks, right?
Is it?
Of the year?
Of the decade?
You don't want to come in Christmas Eve
2019?
I'm not available Christmas Eve. It's the day after the shopping lunch. I can't possibly make it in. The shopping lunch... Yeah.
I've scheduled out that day for a hangover.
I'm unavailable. It's the day after
how
the
shopping
Hanukkah?
Lunch. How about Hanukkah? Can we do next... how about Monday? How about we tape on a Monday on a Hanukkah?
I'm off Monday, too. Oh. I'm off next
that's
week.
That's the day of the
We're not doing it. We're not doing it next week.
Darn it.
I think
that's
we it? Might be done until...
Oh, we
got to
do it the 31st. We got to do it after the...
Yeah, maybe.
Christmas 49? Eve?
Yeah, maybe.
Christmas
yeah, no,
Eve?
We'll be doing it then. We'll be doing it the 31st. I think that's the plan. So we will take a week off and then have something after the 49. Are you going to the Niners game?
I think I might, yeah.
You have to.
No, I will be in I'll be in Santa Clara.
Come on.
I'll be in Santa Clara.
Come on.
I'll be readying for the
you're
Red
trying
Fox.
To tell me you get one lousy bowl game that no one's going to watch and it's the same
no,
time as
watch.
The Niners? No, they're not.
Some Big Fox
Big
people
Fox.
Will watch.
They're not going to watch.
There's college football on. Yes. I will watch.
Why don't you be... You know who's got the best gig is Steve Levy, who's become the official voice of the Bahamas Bowl.
True.
He's done it like nine straight
true.
Years.
It's like, that and the Hawaii Bowl.
They love him. Right.
You know who's the voice of the Vegas Bowl this weekend, by the way.
I don't have a clue.
No longer Musburger. And Herbie's on it. Herbie always does it.
Okay. Yeah.
Bob Wischusen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Bobby. You're going to get to hear big ball game Bobby Wischusen.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that, but that seems like a great way to end the show for the week. We will take a week off. I hope everybody has a fantastic holiday. We'll be back after the Niners game to discuss the end of the season and where we go.
The 13-3 number one seed Seahawks.
Unbelievable. We'll catch you guys later. Until then, the hey.
Burn.
Happy New Year, everybody. See ya.
Get to the chopper!